This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week, number 603, brought to you by Harry's. Go to harrys.com right now and enter code iFanboy at checkout to get a trial shave set for free. That's harrys.com, code iFanboy. And iFanboy listeners just like you. The iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 603. I'm Ron Richards, alongside my co-host Josh Flanagan.
I am here. I wrote your name twice.
I was gonna let it slide.
It's okay.
You can write my name twice because I sound oh so sick. Unfortunately,
mellifluous.
Unfortunately, our other co-host Connor Kilpatrick, he ain't gonna come around here no more.
Nah.
So nope.
He's gone.
We are from the website iFanboy, and every week we read our stack of comics, whether we feel like death or not. And one of us picks our books, picks our favorite book of that week, and we call that the pick of the week. We talk about that book, some other books, your pick from the patrons' pick. And if we have some time, we're going to read some of your email and answer those questions. No matter what, it'll be fun. Quick warning, this is a review show, so we're going to spoil what happens in the comics most likely. So if you haven't read your comics yet, you might want to pause and come back. Just exercise some caution, no matter what. Thankfully, this week, Josh had the pick, so I can stop talking.
Thankfully for you. So the pick this week is Invincible Iron Man number 11, and you might be saying to yourself,
number 11?
Well, yeah, it's 11. I don't know why I wrote 13, but I'm looking at the book. It's 11.
Okay, number 11. from
Brian Bendis, and I saw a trio of artists, and I thought, oh, that's not good.
Right.
But there was a reason for it. Stefano Caselli, Kate Niemczyk, I believe, maybe, Taki Soma, and Kichi Mizushima, which is really fun to say. And the reason that this is the pick of the week is not because of the issue solely on its own. Did you read this?
Of course I did. Yep.
Okay. Did you read the afterword?
No, I did not, actually.
Okay. So you read this story, and basically, if you don't know, Tony Stark has been in a coma for some time, and he has Friday, who is his AI, artificial Pepper Potts, which is a problem. Running the company, he has Mary Jane Watson as his, I guess, sort of personal assistant, also Pepper Potts. A lot of people have to fill in for her. And then his mother, his birth mother, who he found recently, is also sort of there. And they are also
also Pepper Potts.
Yeah, exactly. Well, there you go. They really covered a lot of ground with her. Who created Pepper Potts? And they're sort of telling stories about the history of Tony Stark. And Mary Jane tells a story about when she had actually met him, but he'd forgotten about it. So she says, I'm assuming that's a reveal they're going to put someday. And he came and talked to her in a bar, and they had like an interesting conversation. It was a really sort of nice bit of character work on Tony Stark. Then there was another story about how Riri Williams had actually had an experience with him during the Skrull invasion, which is kind of cool if you think about it in terms of how old she is and how she was a little kid then. And that feels like it wasn't that long ago for us. But if you're a little kid, it's between 10 and 15, then that makes sense. It's kind of cool. And then finally, Friday gives us access to all of Tony's like hidden memories and things he doesn't want people to know. We learn a lot about his philanthropy and that, you know, he's doing all these wonderful things for people that he does not he doesn't tell anybody about. Sort of like George Michael. or Prince, I think. Yeah. Those are the two that after they died, you know, we found out they were doing all this stuff that they didn't publicize that was really good. There's this moment where he goes to orphanages because he was an orphan, and he hugs babies and he holds babies and they're all happy, and it's totally like a maudlin, not maudlin, that's not the right word, it's like a schmaltzy happy feel good kind of moment thing, and I thought a little bit like, oh, that's really sweet. And then as you get to the end, I saw one big block of text instead of the normal letter column. And it was Bendis, and he was writing about it. And he was talking about his neighbor that he'd met when he moved to Portland, this guy named Dick Cheeks. And how his experience with him and his wife, who were really, like, really wonderful people. And they'd invite him over to their dinners where the comic people would come over. And so a lot of the comic community in Portland got to know him. And he got sick, and it was sort of touching. And basically he came over and told him one day, he's like, I'm sick, but I'm fine. I've lived this great life or whatever. And then they found out later that he used to go to orphanages or wherever it was that he would volunteer, and he would hold the babies because the babies need to be held, and they wanted the help, and that he would do that as a thing. Oh. And so as sort of a tribute to this guy, Bendis put that into the story to sort of rework where we were with Tony Stark. And what I find, my point here is that what I find is that when you give, for me, you give media some context. Now, this happens to me with music all the time. When you sort of find out about the people making it or the situations and it gives the songs a little bit of context, it can make me appreciate it a lot more. And sometimes that's not good. Sometimes it's not good to explain what's happening or why or where something came from. But in this context, I thought it gave it a lot more heart. And it gave it a lot more foundation that I like. I thought it was a really nice tribute. There's a story in there where after being around these comic book people for years, this is a pick of the week somewhat dependent on the essay at the end. I'm sorry. That's how we are. It's the one that made me feel something, if you want to talk about it that way, which is the mandate behind it.
Which, honestly, given how much of a cold shell you are, to make you feel anything is amazing.
Exactly. And he was like, he literally said, you know, the world's a shithole right now, and I'm sharing this story because it really helped us out, and we need to know about people like this. And I absolutely agree. He said, you know, I knew Walt Kelly, cartoonist of Pogo.
Pogo, yeah.
And he's like, what? And he's known him and these comic book artists for years and years and years, and he tells him, you know, I knew Walt Kelly. I'm friends with him. I have letters, you know, that went back and forth, and I have some original art that he gave me. And like he gifted that to Bendis and Taki Soma, who's a huge Walt Kelly fan. That's Mike Oeming's wife, I think. Yep. And she drew part of this issue as well. And I got to say, like, it got to me. Like, I'm not saying I was sitting there crying or anything, but like I was like that whole experience of reading that comic book and then the story behind it, I thought was really sweet and really interesting. Furthered by the point that since 2008, when Marvel basically made Robert Downey Jr. into Iron Man, we've had a lot of Iron Man since then, of a certain flavor.
Right.
And as we saw through Civil War and some of the other stuff, he's gotten a little bit away from the idea of being a hero. And I liked that this made him human in part of the first story. The story with Mary Jane was really interesting, the way that it was framed. He was coming on to her, kind of like Scumbag, but then he kind of dropped it and became really honest, and we got to see into it. There's a couple of things she said about him that were not nice, and he just kind of accepted them. He's like, yeah. And it was really sort of self-examining that I thought was really interesting. And then you see the bits at the end of all the good that he's doing with his money instead of just making up a suit for him to fly around and buying fancy cars. And at first you think, oh, that's kind of corny, but then you think, he's a superhero. He's a superhero. Like, he's supposed to do those things. Superman's supposed to do these things. He's supposed to be sort of an icon of caring and compassion and doing those things. And I liked it. I will allow some of that schmaltziness because it's a superhero and he's supposed to make you feel like that. He's supposed to be better than us, even if it's fictionally so. And I think that I've been noticing a lot that because Tony Stark is not present in the books in his actual self, he's an AI in everything that he shows up. We feel like we're getting him, but we're not. And you get that feeling of him being replaced by these new characters. And I miss Tony Stark. I think he works as a really good foil to Captain America, or teammate, partner, you know, whichever way you want to do it. And there's been times where they can't figure out what he is because they're so intent on writing him to sound like Robert Downey Jr., which is not the same thing as a characterization.
Right.
And then further, we've talked about this a lot over the last year, but really Brian Michael Bendis in these two Iron Man books has been reminding me what it was I liked so much about him for a while because I honestly forgot.
Right.
There was a point where whenever Bendis came out with a book, I'd be like, oh, that's the best thing. I can't wait for it. And then for a while, I didn't feel that way. I still read a few of them and like he's got the talent and everything, but I just feel like he's struck into something here that's making us has a little more compassion in it than a lot of the Avengers stuff that he did for a long time and a lot more of the heart that we knew so well. And Bendis has changed a lot. Like he's got like 100 adopted children now. And you know, like he's a different person than he was, and we've seen this. I don't think a lot of that came through in his writing for a while. And I like the connection between the personal and the superhero story a lot. Well, and that is why it's pick of the week. And I glossed over the fact that there were a bunch of artists. And at first I went, I don't want this, because I'd been really just enjoying what the book was before. But it worked out really well for me. Kate Nimchick was on Mockingbird, that short-lived series that was attacked by right-wing trolls constantly. And it was a really, the art was great on that book. That last issue of that series was wonderful.
Yeah. I mean, what's interesting about this, I mean, this book, similar to Avengers as well, this week as well, we're in that no man's land between Secret Empire and Legacy, right? So that gives, we're getting stories that kind of breathe, right? And this doesn't really give us anything to move Riri's story forward at all. It was a nice little moment of, and maybe this is laying the groundwork for future stuff with Tony and, you know, I imagine his eventual return and all that sort of stuff. But, you know, it definitely was, you know, it was a nice in-between story that, like you said, gets to tell that story, which is great, you know. And I think that those are the kind of things that we need to be reminded of, that comics can portray compassion much more than many other mediums. So.
Yeah, and you get leeway that you don't get that sort of postmodern eye rolling that you'd get if you saw it in like a TV show or something like that, because all of a sudden you go, all right, these are primary color superheroes. If there's anywhere to be melodramatic about this kind of thing, you can do it here. And the fact that he backed it up with a reality in the story, you know, that made a difference for me. And like I said, it's not always the answer, but in this case, it worked.
Yeah. All right, cool. Well, good job. Yeah, I've been loving Invincible Iron Man, and as well as the Infamous Iron Man, the Doom book as well too. I think Bendis is really tapping into something really well here. So, and I enjoyed this one as well. I don't know if it was my pick of the week, but this week I don't know if I had a pick of the week.
Well, that was the thing. Like I finished it and I thought that'd be a pick of the week, but that's like a weird review to give.
Yeah.
And then I finished everything else. I had nothing.
Yeah. It was a weird week. It was definitely a weird week. There was some big books and big moments, but. Yep. I was kind of myself struggling going, oh man, if I had to pick, I don't know what I'd go with. I don't know that I would have gone with Generations, Ms. Marvel, and Ms. Marvel number one, but continuing the train wreck that is Generations.
You love it.
I do love
you
it.
You love it.
There's a page in the book where young Ms. Marvel, Kamala Khan, is trying to figure out what happened, why she ended up in the past, and it was just like, I don't know what happened, but that doesn't matter. Like literally so much meta commentary about this dumb event. but that said, Ms. Marvel and Ms. Marvel wasn't as bad as Captain Marvel and Captain Marvel last week, or Captain Marvel. This had Kamala Khan going back to, you know, the 70s, 80s kind of version of Carol Danvers when she was working as a publisher of a women's magazine that was owned by J. Jonah Jameson. And the magazine's not doing very well because they're not sure if people want to read about women's lib in magazines. A renegade Shi'ar villain approaches J. Jonah about buying the magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And Ms. Marvel and Ms. Marvel then fight her. to stop her from buying the magazine. What I like is it's not even like this rogue Shi'ar is here to like take over New York. Or it's like, no, she wants to buy the magazine so she can control the messages going out to the people of Earth in advance of the invasion. Which is kind of clever.
Well, it's pretty low bandwidth on the like reaching the most amount of people.
Well, that's the other thing too, is that so part of it also is that like while they're fighting the Shi'ar villain, Kamala gets mistaken for a intern at this magazine and she gets assigned to go find a good story, and she ends up writing a story and gives it to Carol, and it's about how, you know, in this time of resistance and stress, very, you know, like typical, you know, like of the times now, but like women can, you know, they can talk about political stuff and also want to know about, you know, cucumber eye masks and, you know, and beauty and things like that, and balancing the two, right? Which is a fine message, which is I totally support. And Carol Danvers is like, oh, this is great. We'll fold this into the next issue, you know, because no one's reading anyway, so who cares? And then it's like the next day and it's the newsstand and people are reading this article. And listen, I worked in publishing. I know that magazines can get printed very quickly. You don't turn in a story at the end of the day and the magazine's on the stands the next day, even in the 70s.
That's a newspaper.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, but either way, it was amusing. And I also liked how the art style kind of reflected the retro kind of look of it, you know, like going back in time. We got some great, you know, yelling J. Jonah Jameson, which is always fun. So this wasn't a total train wreck, but it's still just clunky as hell. So.
But in a fun way.
Sure, I'm finding the fun in it. That's okay. My goal with this stuff. So,
fair enough. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Another issue that I sort of unexpectedly enjoyed a lot was Doctor Strange number 25. I don't. This is the longest I've ever read a Doctor Strange book.
Fascinating.
Are you still reading it?
No, I dropped after Jason Aaron left.
Yeah. Well, we have Dennis Hopeless on it after that, and then this one is presumably a fill-in one-shot written by John Barber, who I believe is an editor or formerly an editor.
That name is familiar. You might be right.
And so my initial reaction, much to the chagrin of any editor who actually really wanted to be a writer, including a lot of the ones that have made history, by the way, right, is ugh. Which is really like interesting to me because that's so unfair to them. Right. You know, like my Aubrey Sitterson, he was an editor and he became an editor of Marvel because he thought it would be a good way to become a comic book writer.
Right.
And it turns out that makes it worse.
Yeah.
In a little bit.
Well, yeah. Well, we also had this week there was Gasolina number one from Image, which is written by Sean Makowitz, who is the editor at Skybound.
Oh,
so,
yeah, yeah.
So that's not, you know, it's not unheard of.
I mean, but you also have these guys, these sandbaggers like Mark Waid and Roy Thomas.
Kurt Busiek. You know,
Kurt Busiek. Oh, these guys, you know, they're just editors and they don't. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
They're very good writers. Anyway, right. This was a really good one shot. And the thing I liked about it was twofold. They had flashback sequences that were drawn by Kevin Nolan.
Nice.
So inked by several people, which was a little inconsistent, but also kind of interesting, if I'm going to be honest. And if there's ever a book where you can kind of have it make sense that the art style changes throughout it, you can kind of get by with Doctor Strange.
Right.
If that makes any sense. That's how I just justified it to myself. But it's just like it was a one-shot story about he found this little girl who had this magic in her, and he removed the magic because it was too powerful and too dangerous. And then this is the story of her coming back, you know, when she's an adult, being like, you took all that power away from me. And he basically says, you're right, I was wrong. I shouldn't have done that. I didn't think about you again.
Right.
It was a nice twist. And also just like, it was a cool magic story. After the end of the last issue, which was a big, it was like Doctor Strange and the Defenders all fight Baron Mordo, and it was fine. I felt like this was even the possibly because he was in the old outfit really, but it felt like just more of like, oh, this is what Doctor Strange is supposed to be.
Right.
And I liked it. It had that mystical sort of 70s quality that I thought was really interesting. And again, like I was like, man, that old costume was so good that everything looks stupid now.
Right.
I really enjoyed it. I think this might have been the Doctor Strange issue I've enjoyed the most for a while.
Oh, wow. All right. Yeah, I didn't read this, but maybe I'll go back and check it out.
Yeah, it's just a one-shot, so you can totally do that it doesn't matter.
All right. Cool. So I'm very curious to hear what you thought of Batman the Red Death number one. This is the first one-shot from the metal, the big metal event that Scott Snyder is leading at DC. We had a couple of tie-in, or we had another tie-in issue with Nightwing, which we're not mentioning on the show, but I had no idea what was going on in that. But as far as I can tell, this metal thing is going to be taking over DC until next year, right? So strap yourselves in, get ready.
I'm wondering if it's only going to be in these like miniseries, though.
Well, no, but the regular issue of Nightwing was the metal tie-in.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right, so that said, Josh, what did you think of Batman the Red Death?
Fuck this lettering. That's what I thought. Like the red letters in weird font on the black background. That is not good.
Yeah.
It's hard to read. Then there's another character with similar weird lettering. Sorry. That was the first thing I thought. I got to the first page.
They got a little too stylized. I get what they're doing, like, and I like it. You know, I like the idea of giving us a, you know, narration from different characters and physically changing it. But you're right; it got hard to read.
Yeah. The first one was the first page is bad, and then later when you get to when Batman is the Red Death, there's red balloons and then black text and then a white stroke that's pulled over underneath it or like a drop shadow.
Yeah,
awful. I couldn't read it, and I'm like, you know. That really annoyed me because to me, like, lettering's just supposed to work. You're not supposed to notice. I hate colored lettering. It's like a pet peeve of mine. So remember they used to do that in the JLA books?
Yes.
Where like every character had its own stylized balloon?
Yep.
Jerk off motion. Besides that, I like Josh Williamson. I like Carmine DiGiomenico.
Yep.
You should be doing all Flash issues and not this. I don't know what this was supposed to be.
So as I was reading this, there's been something nagging at me about this whole metal thing, mm-hmm. right? And aside from just the ridiculousness of it, and we've talked about that, how, you know, embrace the ridiculousness, that's fine. It's not the end of the world. But visually and thematically, there's been something nagging at me, and this Batman the Red Death really put me over the top in figuring out what it is.
Please.
This is the Dark Judges from Judge Dredd.
Okay, that sounds familiar to me.
So the Dark Judges were basically a parallel dimension of another planet from Dark World that and they were like Judge Dredd and the other judges, but instead of like being law abiding and justice and all stuff like that, they said that all crime was committed by people who were living, so therefore all life is crime, and so they were just in a mission to kill everybody, right? And the look of the Dark Judges, like if you Google Dark Judges,
I've seen that somewhere. I don't remember what it was. We read that cartoony one. The
yes, yeah, yeah.
They
were in that. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, if you Google right now, if you Google Dark Judges, Judge Dredd, you'll see what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. There was Judge Death, Judge Fire, Judge Mortis. You know, like Judge Kraken. And I don't know if the story, you know, like, I don't think the story is a complete ripoff of this or, you know, like, I know for a fact it's not because the metal stuff and all that sort of stuff, but visually and just thematically in the darkness of it, it's giving me a lot of echoes of the Dark Judges of Judge Dredd, which I find very kind of fascinating.
So, the darkness is the point, like, the whole time that I read this and all the other ones, I really am not enjoying the Batman.
Yes.
Like, who is driven by – I know that Batman's supposed to be driven, but he always has limits, and this doesn't feel like Batman. It's very similar to how Hydra Cap was, where you're just like, stop telling me that it's Cap when it's not. And, like, I feel like that about Batman. Now, clearly, I just spent 15 minutes talking about superheroes being compassionate and wonderful, and that has a great deal to do with my personal outlook on what I want to read about right now.
Right.
So this being the other side of that, I'm having a hard time connecting with it.
Yeah, I'm struggling a little bit with it. I'm sticking with it. I mean, because I like the character designs. I thought Josh Williamson and Carmine DiGiomenico did a great job on this. I get what's going on loosely.
Mm-hmm.
I'm holding on to the thread of it as best I can. But it's just something was sticking in the back of my craw, and I was like, Dark Judges, Judge Dredd, this is it.
Yeah.
So, and it could be one of the things where I doubt that they're even aware of that. You know what I mean?
Like, sure.
It's one of those things that are just in the ether, you know. And if you go and Google Dark Judges, you'll see what I'm talking about. You see, they're reminiscent of Judge Dredd, but they look dark. You know, so.
Yeah. I guess I like the. There's a cover. I don't know if it's the main cover. I guess like the suit on the cover is much more subtle than the one inside. Like the arm flaps are all over the place.
Arm flaps.
Whatever, like the little pointy bits.
Pointy bits.
So there's that.
Okay.
Did you happen to read Wonder Woman Conan #1?
I didn't, and I gotta admit, I'm surprised to see it on here.
I just, well, you know what? There weren't actually a lot of books this week, and I had the pick, so I was like, I'm going to try to cover my bases and go wide. This was written by Gail Simone, which was, I got a little bit of surprise, and drawn by Aaron Lopresti. And so what was great about it, as soon as I started, was I was like, oh, this isn't a Wonder Woman story. This is a Conan story.
Nice.
Like, so the whole thing is written from Conan's point of view, and it's like a classic Conan comic book. And he finds the fighting pits in this city, and for some reason they have Wonder Woman trapped in there. And so this guy who owes Conan money is like, I know I promised you the money, but I don't have it. But I made a bet that I can't lose on this fighter. And he's like, well, how do you know that fighter's going to lose? And he's like, it's a woman. And so they go there, and it turns out that she wins. And so he doesn't get his money, but it turns out that Conan had met this little girl years ago, and she was kind to him or something like that. It doesn't matter because it's a ridiculous story, so you just go with it and you don't worry about the things. But Gail Simone did a very passable Conan, Robert E. Howard narration and dialogue sort of bit to it, and it was kind of fun. Like, I was like, all right, I wouldn't have thought of that crossover as the thing. Also, I don't know why it's happening. I don't believe that DC has a Conan license in any way. You know, Lopresti did good art for Conan.
Well, it's a crossover with Dark Horse. Their Dark Horse logo's on the cover. I mean, DC has been doing these crossovers with Dynamite and IDW and Dark Horse all the time. So
that's really interesting.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Well, they're giving the fans what they want. I mean, it is we know it's the ultimate fan service, right? So
it is, and it doesn't always work, and sometimes it's stupid, but I thought this was really well done, and it was kind of fun. And like, I don't want to read Conan all the time.
Right.
But every once in a while, I can totally dig some Conan.
Right.
Like, I've tried to do it monthly, you know, where you know, and about 3 or 4 months in, I'm like, all right, that'll do for a while. I got to take a break. But you dip into some Conan every once in a while. It does you good. I really like how they sort of, like, they're always sliding the scale on how barbaric versus how human Conan is.
Right.
And this one's a little more towards the, he's like Jonah Hex, but he's kind of smart. He's not, you know, he's kind of a good guy in this, as opposed to just a raging marauder. Yeah. It worked, and she looks like he did a really great Diana in this. She looks wonderful. It's fun.
Cool. What was also fun was All New Guardians of the Galaxy number 10, which I gotta admit I like. I feel like it's taken 10 issues. It's been going a little slower than I would like it, but I get the hint that Jerry Duggan is got something building that's going to be a ton of fun for us once it gets going. Mm-hmm. And it's related to embracing everything that I personally have fallen in love with, the space Marvel. Nova Corps get mentioned, you know, of course the Guardians. They've got he threw Darkhawks into the mix, and now we've got Infinity Stones into the mix. Which we all know, you know, like that is the football within Marvel, right? Those Infinity Stones. But, you know, some of the greatest times in Marvel history have been when those were involved, you know, the Infinity Gauntlet, Infinity Watch, etc. And so this story kind of kicks off the search for the stones storyline, which is what we're going to be getting. And in a way that is, you know, basically the Guardians were hired to go capture, to go bring this egg to the what's his name, the collector or the grandmaster, one of those names, right?
Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah, Jeff Goldblum. And they find out that that the egg is empty, but turns out the egg isn't empty. So the grandmaster they're gonna sell to, and the egg hatches, and inside the egg happens to be his brother, who is the collector. And so then they all start fighting, and we find out that there are other cosmic brothers of them, the Contemplator, the Gardener, right? There's all these other, you know, other people that are in their family, right? And the Gardener is actually the one who was holding on to the soul gem, but he's lost it, and he might be involved in Groot's creation. And so, like, it tied it all into the crazy cosmic shit, but tied it in with the Guardians in a way that I was like, oh, this is going to be fun. You know, and then we get a flashback to the Gardener hanging out with Loki, and Loki's looking for the soul gem, but he finds out that he doesn't have it. And so now it's like, and Gamora wants the soul gem, and so it's moving the pieces on the board, and it ends which says the quest for the stones has begun, the adventure monthly in Guardians of the Galaxy, which is like, sign me up, I'm all for it. So
that's, I gotta say, because I had the first couple, and it wasn't bad. I just kept not continuing with it.
Sure.
But you're 10 issues in, and that's still the same storyline, basically.
Well, but it hasn't even started yet, so that's what's kind of annoying.
Yeah, that's a long run up.
Yeah, yeah.
Are they coming out every 2 weeks?
No, well, they said monthly now, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
But like the 10 now, has that been 5 months? It feels more like.
Yeah, probably. It hasn't since the movie came out, I think. Yeah.
Right. So, okay.
So maybe they're moving to monthly. Maybe, hopefully, Aaron Cooter stays on as the monthly penciler because he's great. But either way, like, I've been having fun up to this point, but I feel like it's just going to get even more fun. So
awesome.
Yeah.
Well, you know what's fun? Well, it's not shaving, but you know what makes it a little more fun is Harry's. Like, I actually had this little moment where I'm like, I have to shave. It's not a big deal for me to do that, but I have to find time for it. Normally, doing a lot of parenting and stuff like that, I'm like, I don't know when I'm going to – oh, I have to shave today. What's going to be a thing? And then just for a moment, I go, well, I got my Harry's stuff. That's cool. I get to use that. And it makes me happy for just a second there because I know that's going to go pretty well and smooth, and they're cheap. So when I run out, I don't worry about it because I used to use the other kind from before. And every time I run, I'm like, oh, it's going to be like $20 just to get some. And I got to go to the case and the whole thing, and I don't want that. Now I just click on the Harry's thing. It's back in a couple of days, and it's a much better price. So – Harry's is sponsoring iFanboy, and they're so confident that you're going to love their blades that they're going to give you a trial shave set for free. So what I just talked about, that can be all yours completely free if you sign up at harrys.com/iFanboy, and all you have to do is pay for the shipping, which ain't a lot. So why are we talking about Harry's? Why are they here? It's all about a great shave at a fair price for your face, which is why over 3 million guys have switched to Harry's for shaving their – that's a lot of dudes who need to shave. It was started by Jeff and Andy, who are two regular Joes, two Jamokes, ordinary guys who are fed up with buying overpriced razors, which they started Harry's to fix. So they bought their own German factory. Germans are good at making razor blades, apparently, but they had over 100 years of blade making experience. So they took over that place to produce for Harry's to guarantee the highest quality, and everything you buy from them has 100% quality guarantee. So that means if you don't like it, you have your money back. And that's always good. So if you go there and you think this isn't good, this isn't what I was, so I don't like this, you could go back to them. You're totally not going to do that though. So it's not a thing you have to worry about. Their blades are half the price of the leading 5-blade razor, and selling directly to you over the internet makes that possible. So you can claim your free trial offer from Harry's today. It's a $13 value, and it's free when you sign up. All you do is pay for the shipping. That includes a weighted ergonomic razor handle. I can vouch for that guy. A 5 precision-engineered blades, which means there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of them. Plus, there's a little one in the back, the trimmer blade, which Ron has said before he uses for his famous sideburns. And, of course, the lubricating strip. You'll get the rich lathering shave gel, which I actually really like a lot, and a travel blade cover, which does not seem like a big thing, but it is a big thing. So you go to harrys.com/iFanboy right now. And that's harrys.com/iFanboy. We thank them again for being a continuing sponsor of the show. And it's a product we really like, so that makes it pretty easy. And thanks to all of you out there who let us know that you use that coupon. And let Harry's know, too. That's actually really important to us, too. So,
Viva Harry's.
Indeed. Invincible is winding down.
Yeah.
We are at issue 140, which is part 8 of the final 12 issues. This one was a standard Kirkman Otley issue, and it's basically, what's funny is I do not know the name of the bad guy. 140 issues and he's been around forever. He's the guy with the short hair and the sort of Hitler-y mustache, but it's a little more cop mustache, I guess. Him and this whole issue is him and Mark fighting in the sun as it melts their hair, skin, and eventually their bodies start to get ripped away. And Robot shows up to make a sacrifice to help Mark, so Mark can put the suit on before that suit melts away so he can try to beat the guy as they battle within a sun. I have never seen an issue that looked like this. And they stuck to it. The whole issue is this fight within the sun. They brought on Nathan Fairbairn to color it. And I don't know – I know he hasn't historically done this, but good choice. For this to bring in Nathan Fairbairn to color, because he's a really good colorist, and this needed somebody with just the right touch. Nathan has this, like, it's an old school sort of comic. It's not way outside of how a lot of comic books are colored. It's just done really tastefully, I think. You know, it's like if you mix that sort of bombastic color style of Laura, what's her name?
Laura Martin.
Laura Martin, but then sort of like then the other side of it with like a Dave Stewart, who is, you know, sort of much more subdued. Right. Put those together a little bit, and I think that's how you get a Nathan Fairbairn. And that was honestly the coloring was the thing that I was most impressed with is in this one. Mark
like,
is
and that's how you get a Nathan Fairbairn. Now, when a mama Nathan Fairbairn and yep. a papa Nathan Fairbairn go have dinner with Laura Martin, that's how you get a Nathan Fairbairn.
Yep. Well, it's, you know, it's important, and these guys don't get enough credit, and he's really one of the really good ones that I don't think his name gets mentioned quite as much, but when I see his name on a book, I know that's going to be really good. And Ryan Ottley does big fights really well. Lots of sinew and gross stuff. And, you know, it's this thing. This is wrapping up. I'm going to miss it, but I'm also ready for it to be over. Or at least the war part. I like the personal stuff. I don't like the war parts as much. But this has to happen. It's the thing that everybody's been waiting for. So we're almost done with what is honestly one of the greatest superhero stories of my lifetime.
Yeah, you know, for sure. The Wildstorm number 7 had one of the best action sequences I've seen all week.
That flipping panel thing?
Yep. So there's a guy in a place, and he gets found out, and he's got to get out, and his two guys in the hallway, and he pulls his gun on him, and there's this great running down the hallway, get past two guys action sequence that was just amazing.
So here's my question.
Yep.
I don't know what Warren Ellis scripts look like.
Right.
But it seems like no matter what artist he's working with, there is connective tissue with this, that kind of imagery.
Yep.
And that is not usually the case. First of all, he seems to be a guy who is, you know, he really appreciates good art. He knows how to work with good artists. We had John Davis Hunt on this, who's great for this. Right. I'm just like, I know that like when we first reviewed this, Connor had reservations about it, whatever. Like, he's perfect for this. I'm 100% happy. I'm so glad it's not somebody trying to ape Jim Lee and go back to be like, this was what Wildstorm was. But I want to know what Warren Ellis is doing with his scripts that sort of get that. Because there's been action sequences like this over in the book he's doing with Declan Shalvey.
Yeah.
The name that
Injection.
Ejection, right. You know, and I feel like he's not – most artists don't want to be overscripted. They don't want to be given a line reading per se.
Right.
But there's
no,
something –
I think he's definitely I mean, the way Ellis gets this stuff out of the writers, I got to imagine he's giving – I mean, and most writers do. We'll give panel direction, you know. Like,
yes.
You know, and so it becomes this hybrid combination of what is in Ellis's head, what he's writing in the script, and then what the artist can do with it, you know. So it's definitely – I mean, that's comics, right? It's not – you know, like I know some people are very – you know, Mark Miller will write a single page with "they fight" and let the artist go to town,
right,
while other people say they fight and this is what happens, you know. And so, I think Ellis is more on the side of saying what should happen. So.
Yeah, but I really had the idea that he was not a guy who was giving really precise instructions. But now I've seen this in enough of his stuff. And honestly, his work redefined what comic books look like.
Yep.
The writer's work. And I know that he had artists working with him. He had Brian Hitch and Frank Quitely, but it was all of them across the board. So you've got to give him credit for that to a certain
totally,
extent.
Yeah, totally.
And he's still doing it. Anyway, this series is great. I get really excited. It doesn't come out every 4 minutes. I think it's actually been a little bit of delay, and I get very excited that it's coming out. And now they're starting to form the team. You're like, oh, I see where the Wild.
Yeah, it feels like it took 7 issues to get to start.
But that's, you know, again, Decompressed Comics, that he did that.
Yep, that's fine. So. Meanwhile, over in X-Men Gold, number 12, X-Men Gold continues to give the fans what they want. And while one half of the issue or two-thirds of the issue was a bit of a slowdown, as we find out more about the big, nasty, green alien guy, we find out where he came from, who he is, what his role is. But it ends with Mojo dealing with low ratings, calling for an epic crossover.
Ratings.
Set ratings. So next issue is going to bring us an epic crossover, which is just right up the X-Men's alley. So Mark Guggenheim continues to give the fans what they want, and I still don't know if it's a good thing.
So I was driving in the car yesterday, and they were talking about China's credit rating.
Ratings.
And as soon as they said ratings to NPR by myself, that was a moment for everybody. Sorry, I couldn't help it. Star Wars Corner.
It's just you and me.
Over the Star Wars Corner.
It's just you and me.
It's always just you and me.
I know. We can stretch out. We can make the Star Wars Corner wider this time.
So. Again.
Did you read
Watch the Corners?
Did you watch the Corners? Did you read Star Wars Annual number 3?
I did read Star Wars Annual number 3, okay, largely because of Michael Walsh on art.
Well, yeah, and Jason Latour writing is no, you know, like, I think that's worth
it. It isn't,
too.
And yeah. You come for the Walsh, you stay for the Latour.
Right. Well, so as I read this, I was laughing because I'm kind of upset. I was upset that Connor's not on the show this week, because I think last week when we were talking about the Captain Phasma book, and we were saying how I don't want to know what happens in between things, and I believe he specifically said, I don't want to know what happened with the bounty hunters at Ord Mantell. Mm-hmm. And this annual is a little adventure with Han and Leia, and admittedly I was reading it very quickly and I missed the location of the planet they were on, but when I got about 3 pages in and I saw bounty hunters targeting Han, I flipped back. I was like, no way are they doing exactly what Connor said he didn't want to see. Mm-hmm. But luckily enough, they weren't. This is a different adventure. They're on the planet Odana, and turns out there's a old smuggling gig that Han screwed up, and the guy wants revenge. And it's kind of a, you know, the little story of Han and Leia trying to get out of this jam. I thought Latour got Han's voice down perfectly.
I did too. I thought that was really well done. Just as his partner Jason Aaron did.
Yeah.
Really. And you know, it must be said, put a guy, I'm not saying put Michael Walsh on it. If you want to, awesome. Put an artist like this on the main Star Wars book, please.
Yep.
Just for me. I don't even know if it'll sell better, but this is what I want to see.
It looked great. His Leia looks great. Michael Walsh is just great, period. Like, I
absolutely,
you know, yeah, like, he's fantastic. And this really, really looked good. So.
Yep. Yeah, it was fun.
Finally, I know you're not reading it, but Poe Dameron number 19.
You are still reading that. I was reading it for a while, and I kind of dropped off. But.
Well, here's my thing. So, first off, how did this get to 19 issues?
He's a charming guy,
I guess. Secondly, and I understand, you know, so Charles Soule is writing this, and this is more of a craft question I have for you, Josh. But mm-hmm. as I'm reading this, there's an overuse of names.
And what I mean by
that is they end every, not every time, but like I was comparing it to Star Wars Annual by Latour, and like there's I noticed this, there's an abundance of speech bubbles that are like, how are we going to get out of this, Poe? Hold on, Snap, I'm figuring it out. You know, like,
I would say that that's intentional.
Okay.
I mean, I know it's intentional because, I mean, I've gotten that. I find that this depends on the era of the person.
Right.
Who is writing it or what they think should be happening. But over identification is a mainstay of comics. And if you think about who the intended audience for this is, it's beneficial to everybody that they're identifying everybody, especially if, you know, Snap and Poe in a drawing might look pretty similar.
No, they don't. Snap has a beard, looks like Greg Grunberg, and Poe Dameron looks like Oscar Isaac, who's just dreamy.
Just a white dude with
no,
dark
no,
hair.
They're enough. But to the point where, like, I'm reading this and I started not.
Oscar Isaac's not just a white dude.
Yeah, I found myself rereading this and not saying the names.
Uh huh.
You know, like, so, like, at the end of the book, Poe gets out of his X-wing, and one of the people in the squadron says, "I thought we weren't supposed to see any real action on this mission, Poe. You weren't supposed to, Jess. I'm glad you're all right." You know, like, and I just stopped reading the names, and it read much better.
Yeah, I don't think it doesn't serve a purpose.
Yeah,
and I know that, like, you if you don't need it, somebody might. And with this kind of thing, they're over.
But Latour didn't do it in the Star Wars book. That's what, I mean, I was comparing.
Right. Well,
yeah. So.
But that's what I was saying though, is that, like, he's coming from a completely different place.
Yeah.
Than Charles Soule is. Charles Soule is writing. You know, he's been mired in really mainstream comics for a while and doing those. And this is a licensed property of a really big important thing. And they're trying to bring in people who aren't from comics. And you don't need it. You're an advanced user. But
I don't know if it's that. I don't know. I feel like it's not. I get that. Don't get me wrong. I get that. But go back and read this issue, and you'll see what you won't. But if you go back and read this issue, you'll see what I'm talking about. And I think it's a. I think it's a case of.
Maybe overstep the line a little then.
A little bit, and maybe not trusting the artist as much. I don't know. It just
or,
it,
you know,
it's something I noticed as I was reading. I'm like, there's the names again and again,
you know what?
And again. You know,
maybe it's a network note.
Maybe, who knows?
Maybe it's coming from Lucasfilm. I mean, it's very possible.
Yeah. All right, well, that's going to wrap up Star Wars Corner. Every week, our loyal iFanboy patrons who we love get to vote on a book that comes out this week, and then make us read it and talk about it. This week, the Patriots pick. The voting was very, very close this week, right? It was a tight race amongst several books. But the winner was Angelic number one from Image Comics with story by Cy Spurrier, art by Casper Wingard, and a lot of monkeys.
Who I believe is now in charge of the Hellfire Club.
All right, so Josh, what did you think of Angelic number one?
I think that Simon Spurrier has created a very nice looking book with a good team on art and letters. It's really interesting and smart, and almost nothing he's written has ever resonated with me in any way. And I hate to bring it down to that, but like as soon as I started reading, I said, oh, okay, so it's an alternate society where we have these sort of monkey creatures and they have their own rules of their society, and it's good for some people and bad for others. And they have their own language, like Frank Miller used in The Dark Knight Returns. That's I'm sure somebody did it before him, but that's what the first thing that I ever came upon in comic, and everything has its own little jargon and dialogue and way of speaking. I said immediately, oh, I know what this is. And I read through the whole thing, and it was what I thought it was, and it's not. It's not for me.
This is a world that is, I imagine it takes place in the future. Humanity has abandoned the Earth after some large war that involved weaponizing animals, and we're focusing in on a species of monkeys who also have wings, and they are afraid of being terrorized by the flying dolphins, and they have all these religion and kind of faith based on the bits and pieces they're able to pick up from what humanity left behind them. And of course there's a jaded monkey who's ready for her next step in their kind of traditions, and she doesn't want to. It involves having her wings clipped and getting pregnant and continuing on. And she meets a what is the animal at the end of it in the pod? Is that a seal?
Some cutesy animal.
I
suppose if I had like a more like a seal walrus.
Yeah, it looks like a seal. Thing. Yeah, kind of like
It looks like Krang from the Ninja Turtles, but with a cute face.
Yeah. And if you read if you read Cy's essay in the back, this all stemmed from going to the zoo and noticing, looking in the monkey pen, and there was dark skinned monkeys and light skinned monkeys, and they're all staying amongst their own kind. And exploring the idea of inherent racism within animals or not. In this case, they were trained that way because there are animals that were saved from a cosmetic testing facility, and animals by nature aren't racist, but when they learn from humans, and aren't humans so bad.
A genuine criticism of this is that I think it tried to do way too much.
Yeah.
If you think about what you just said, I read that in the back because I was like, maybe that'll help me make sense of what this was. And I didn't even see that in the book. I saw them tackling what looked like some sort of classism and then some form of sexism. But then there's a lot of different animal, and they all have a language. It was too many things that by the end of that issue, I felt completely overwhelmed with. It was a lot of effort to make the point that I don't think needed to be there.
Right.
If that makes sense, which means it was thought out really well. He tried to build a world, and some people are really going to gravitate to that. But it was a lot of stuff flying at you. And, it was the cutesy, it's flying monkeys. So that's a Wizard of Oz sort of reference. And then you had all these, when you point out the flying dolphins and they come to do the thing, and then there's a cat and the cats are mean. And it was a lot of pop culture hodgepodge stuff when they all have their own language. And I was like, I just want to read a comic book, man.
All right. So ratings.
3.5.
3.5. I will concur. I will give it 3.5 as well.
Yeah, I have a feeling there are people out there who really like this, but I'm not that reader. So it wasn't badly done at all. Cover was kind of boring.
Yep.
Not a great cover.
All right, well, thank you, patrons, for voting on that. And you can sign up at patreon.com/ifanboy. And any level that you sign up as a patron, you get instant access to be able to vote every week on the patron pick. So please do join. And also, if you sign up at a certain level, I believe $5 or higher, you get bestowed a special superpower from us, where we are giving the patrons, they're making wishes come true. Wishes.
Wishes.
And giving them interesting superpowers. First up is Adam Ulrich. I want to thank Adam for supporting iFanboy as a patron. And Adam's power, every night, you know how I like the one word power, right?
Yeah, I do.
Sauces.
Go on.
Adam can make a gravy, a sauce. He gets it right every time.
Oh, he doesn't break the butter.
Yeah, it's not too watery, or it's not too thick, or like the balance of spices isn't right. And it doesn't matter what the sauce is. You could be doing a bolognese. You could be doing a turkey gravy. You could be doing a roux.
Does it go so far as chili? Could he do that, or is that too much of a stew?
Chili's too much of a stew. He struggles just like the rest of us with the chili or any sort of thing like that. But we're talking, there's just a litany. I mean, if you classic cooking, French cooking, and the like, it's all based on the sauces, right? So, he's got it. His first step in cooking class sauces. He's got it under control. So.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So there you go. Sauces.
Shane Stornanti, might be my favorite name right now. Shane Stornanti. On his left hand, each finger has a different kind of electronic port.
Interesting.
So the thumb is a USB. There's a USB-C. There's a mini USB. There's a lightning plug.
What happens when new plugs get rolled out?
You think it's a problem for you. For Shane, it's a problem, and of course the pinky is a 2.5 millimeter mini stereo plug. So I don't even know. I'm not sure that he's figured out how to use those interfaces, but he has them. Maybe its dark purpose is yet to be foreseen.
Does he have plugs that don't exist yet, or do the plug, like, so USB-C is fairly new? Did one day he wake up and he had a USB-C port?
It's possible, or maybe he's had it all along. It's a miss. He showed up one day. Okay. He said, Professor X, or whoever the equivalent of that is, this is what is happening to me.
Yep.
And there's a lot of discovery left to be done. But they're there. He was born with them, and nobody can believe that happened without purpose.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Ports.
Bjorn Bellenbaum. All right. Well, thank him for being a supporter of Patreon. Sometimes these powers aren't really sexy or, uh-huh, or attractive. But Bjorn has several tens of tiny little hands around his feet.
Okay.
And he doesn't actually walk with his feet. He walks with these little fingers moving the feet along.
You know, before I got to the USB ports,
yep,
I had something similar to that. So I'm glad. Yep. Yeah.
So that's there good. It is. So he's got.
That's creepy.
It's very creepy. It's gross to look at. But he is also, he can move in ways that none of us can comprehend.
Uh-huh.
He's very, like, on the tennis court, it's amazing.
Okay.
So. But the thing is, he's got to be barefoot all the time, so.
Can he put shoes on, or are they too bulky?
He can put shoes on. They'll fold up, but it is.
Like angel's wings?
Yeah, exactly. But it's holding him back.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Blake Button. You know how Spider-Man occasionally has had organic web shooters?
Sure.
Blake can shoot organic zip ties. Zip tie anything.
What do organic
wraps around and tightens.
What do organic zip ties look like? Regular zip ties?
They just look like regular zip ties.
Okay,
but they're produced from within. He secretes zip ties.
So weird.
Yeah.
All right then.
But helpful.
Yep.
Yeah. The useful guy to have out there, whether doing electronics or whatever. So
when you need to tie something, he's your man.
So thank you to the patrons. If you go to patreon.com/ifanboy and you support the show at a level of $5 or higher, you will be on the list. Got a message, a couple of messages from people asking, hey, when's my thing coming? I signed up a little while ago. That'd be a little while. We're working through them. We're only a few months behind now, I think.
Well, so quick update on the patrons, by the way. So the patron powers are coming every week. Patron rewards are I've been working on them the past couple of weeks. Next batch of rewards should be applying the postage this weekend and mail them out on Monday. So if you've been waiting on your rewards, thank you for your patience. They'll be coming soon.
Yeah, it's not the name thing is we can't do them all.
Right. We don't want to sit here and do 10 at a time, whatever. But
we won't be able to think of any. Like, the last four will be terrible. So yeah.
There's a bunch of patrons who have signed up who are waiting on their comics and their stickers and buttons. That is all coming. It is coming soon.
So that's one thing you can do. You can go to patreon.com/ifanboy. We are around $400 away from our next goal, which is a non-comics media podcast. And Part of me wants to just lower that because I kind of want to do it. But no, you got to earn it. I'm a dad. That's how this works. You got to get there. And then we will work on our regular monthly non-comics media podcast, sort of a mini version of our all media show that will be coming up at the end of the year. So that's the next goal. You can also go to ifanboy.com/support. You'll find an Amazon link there as we get closer to the holidays. Yes, I'm saying it. If you can, we'd really appreciate it if you made that your sort of default Amazon link and place your orders through there. Doesn't affect you at all, but it sends a little bit of that purchase our way. And of course, there's still direct donation via PayPal. And again, I can't stress this enough. Tax time is coming up, eccentric billionaires. You're going to just sit on that? You're going to pay that money to the government? Listen, and also, we're not tax deductible, but still. We're not a 501c3, 3c, whatever. We're not that thing. But you know what? I bet your accountant can work it out. It's a good thing you're making all that money.
Yeah, it's good. it's a good problem to have.
That's what I'm saying. Finally, the t-shirt store is up and running. It is going. You can go to ifanboy.threadless.com. We have four designs currently. There's the two classic. There's the iFanboy shirt, just this plain old logo, and the Herm shirt, inspired by a comic book series that has sold a lot of copies and has some broken reconstruction characters in it that you may know. And one of them says Herm. And there's two new ones. There's the Pick of the Week podcast, the ratings. Ratings shirt.
Ratings. Which
is a lovely ratings. Shirt. And of course, this is an Electro shirt. If one is Electro, which good luck explaining to anybody you work with.
Yeah.
But I have my Electro shirt is on the way now. It took me a little while to get it. It should be here any moment now. So I'm very excited about it.
It's a great shirt. I got to admit, whoever designed that shirt, A+.
Yeah, it was you, Ron.
Whoever hired someone to design that shirt, A+.
Let's do one of these emails.
No, let's do rapid fire. We can do. I think we can get through
a bunch
of them.
All right. Mark from Illinois says, "I've been thinking about this question since 2015 when I started reading after a 20-year hiatus." That's awesome. Is the Justice League logo the most uninspired logo in comics? It's their flagship book, and it looks like a lazy teenager designed it on a Commodore 64. I'm annoyed every time I see it.
I like that. This email represents that not everything works for everybody.
I just like his commitment to it. It's how I feel about the glowing spider.
Yep. By the way, if you don't like the glowing spider, read Spectacular Spider-Man, because Andy Kubert's doing something with Spider-Man's pants that I just don't know. I'm like, who approved this?
Yeah.
So
I don't know. What do you think of the Justice League logo?
I don't know if it's as harsh as a teenager on a Commodore 64, but it's not great, Bob.
Not great, Bob.
Most of the logos at DC, I have a hard time with. I don't think they need a new designer. I think so.
But what's odd is like the old ones.
Great. The JLA badge from Morrison. Yep. That was great. Anyway.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. All right. The old ones are wonderful.
Next email. Eric from Virginia. I've been thinking about this question since I heard on Pick of the Week 602. So less than a week. When Connor made a point that Star Wars comics could ruin Star Wars for him. Something I agree with. So the question is for Ron. Could you reach a point when future X-Men movies ruin X-Men for you? Which most of the movies do. Hey, listen, man. If those movies haven't ruined my enjoyment of the X-Men yet, I don't think it's going to happen.
Yeah, there's been a couple of stinkers in there.
Yeah, exactly. If I can survive X-Men The Last Stand, I can pretty much survive anything. So I'm not worried about this. All right, last question.
Finally, Brian says, if you had the power of Genesis and used it when telling someone to go screw, what exactly would they then do?
Well, that's obvious. They would go screw.
I think the power of Genesis from Preacher is what he's talking about.
Right. I think defining what goes screw happens is ruin some of the magic, to be honest.
I agree with you.
Yeah,
so I was
like
Electro. Get to that.
It's like Electro.
I think it's going to depend largely on the hearer and possibly even the sayer. I don't know exactly how the technical aspect of Genesis works.
It's like I recently saw I'm a broken record with this stuff, but I recently saw a documentary about one of my favorite bands, and there's a very, very awkward moment where the documentarians are asking the main songwriter and singer guitarist to explain songs, and they say do you want to talk about Accident Prone? And long pause, and he goes, no. And they said, do you want to talk about Kiss the Bottle? And he goes, no, I don't want to do that. And they said, do you want to talk about Chesterfield King? And he goes, no. And basically he then explains that if I were to explain to you all that sort of stuff, that ruins some of the magic of it, and I don't want to ruin the magic. And I think that's a valid answer. And so go screw. Up to your own imagination.
I like the fact that I don't even remember where that came from, and I don't know what it means.
Yep.
And that is its beauty. And we've already talked about it too much. So, Brian, go screw for making us do that. Yep. If you want to write in, you can go to contact@ifanboy.com. Send us an email there. We will possibly use it for the show. You know, make sure you let us know how long you've been thinking about it. If you've only been thinking about it since 602, that's not your fault because you didn't know about it before then. It's fine. Whatever. We have other shows. We just released this past week our Booksplode on Cerebus Volume 3, which is part one of the Church and State storyline of Dave Sims' epic Cerebus. Special guest star in the show, noted Cerebus expert and fan Alex Robinson, who is an Eisner-winning cartoonist and host of the Star Wars Minute and Godfather Minute podcast. Really enjoyed that show. And I guess I'll spoil it for you. We really like the book, and it's really worth talking about, and it's interesting, and you should go check it out and listen to the show.
I agreed. It was a fun one. It was a long one, yep. But it was fun.
Yep.
And then, of course, we've got other podcasts in our feed, as well as podcasts that are coming up. You want to go back, check out that Booksplode. The Animation Brain Trust talked about Batman and Harley Quinn. That's out there. We also talked about The Tick, which was a by request of the listeners. Coming up, we got the next Kingsman movie. Connor, I don't know when he's seeing it. I might see it this weekend, so we'll get that out eventually. And then we've got some other stuff. I know there's another Animation Brain Trust coming up. And then, of course, we've got the fall TV season, and we'll probably be looking at The Gifted and Star Trek and some other fun stuff. So we got a lot of fun extra podcasts coming your way, so definitely stay tuned to that. Stay subscribed to the feed. Tell your friends to subscribe to the feed. And you can do that by going to ifanboy.com, where you can find all the other podcasts, including the aforementioned link to subscribe to the feed. Even if you know anyone, or if you're in an Apple store, just go subscribe to the feed. That's all we're saying.
Subscribe to every feed.
Yeah, exactly.
The feed.
And of course, follow us at facebook.com/ifanboy and Twitter @ifanboy. And that's how you can find out what the pick is before the show comes out. And you can follow us individually at Josh is @JAFlanagan, and I'm @RonXO on both Twitter and Instagram. And Connor is @CSKilpatrick on Instagram.
If you like this show, first of all, the feed. Get on that feed.
Yep.
It's all about the feed, but also you could write a review on iTunes. You could tell folks about it. Share links on social media, things like that. Comic books make you feel good, and this makes you feel good talking about those comic books that make you feel good. Then tell folks about it. That's really helpful to us. And I you never know about a really good comic or a really good podcast could be around the corner. Somebody might not even know about us. So yeah. If you help do that, we really appreciate that. And that is going to do it for this show. It's too bad about Connor.
Yep. Hopefully.
I'm not going to say we'll miss him. But he did do some things that I don't want to do. There's some tasks.
All right. So until next time, I'm Ron.
And I'm Josh. Go hold some babies.
And subscribe to that feed.
Feed!
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.